Welcome to the Dive Podcast, presented by Willamette Week. I'm your host, Hank Sanders. Join us every Saturday for a deep discussion about the biggest stories of the week. Go behind the scenes with journalists, political figures, and newsmakers to get a unique look at our city. And also, I want to hear from you, the listener. So please send any questions, critiques, or sponsorship inquiries to my email at hsanders@wweek.com. Thank you so much and enjoy this episode of the Dive Podcast. Welcome back to the Dive Podcast. I'm your host, Hank Sanders. Great to have you with us for episode 56 of the Dive Podcast. I'm your host, like I said before, January 22nd. Can you believe we've done 56 episodes of this thing? You know, I went back and I listened to the first couple episodes, and let me tell you, we have changed for the better. We've really found ourselves, and look at it. Last week was our best week yet. We were doing stupid numbers. So just thank you for sharing, subscribing, being a part of this community that we're building here, and every single week we're getting a little bit better, so I appreciate it. Our guest today is a freelance journalist. He wrote this week's Willamette Week cover story. His name is Thatcher Schmid. He wrote the story about homelessness in Portland, and more specifically, he talked about RV homeless people, so people who live in RVs, what that means for the community. And I'm asking him big questions, big cosmic questions about our community, about our city, where we're headed, where we come. It's a ride. But before we have to do that, before we bring you that story, we have a duty, an obligation to bring you all the headlines, everything that happened this week. This is the 9-Second Newsflash. Folks, how often does this happen? The biggest story of the week this week is a meme. The Portland Police Bureau inserted a meme at the end of one of their training presentations. And this wasn't your run-of-the-mill meme. It wasn't a kitten stuck in a tree or a couple Spider-Men pointing at each other. This was a meme that depicted a person in military gear, in a police military gear more specifically, with a glove fist ready to strike a hippie, somebody who they described as a dirty hippie, a white dreadlocked wannabe Marxist who reeks of sweat and patchouli oil, according to the image's text. The meme also included a mock biblical verse that promises to, quote, christen your heads with hickory and anoint your faces with pepper spray before concluding with an amen. So pretty interesting there, pretty striking that this was included in the training package for police officers. It's turning into a dogfight in the Oregon governor's race. Secretary of State Shamia Fagan released her complete statement as to why Democratic candidate Nick Kristof should be excluded from running for governor. And this was due to residency issues, but she explained in more detail why she voted the way that she did. And yet Kristof is carrying on with his appeals process and is continuing his election. And he raised big numbers this week from big-time donors, founder of LinkedIn, a lot of big-name people. So we'll see how this pans out. In other governor race news, Casey Kula, a Yamhill County commissioner, he is dropping out of the governor's race, and he is going to now run for the role of labor commissioner. A national nonprofit that accredits correction facilities on healthcare standards put the Multnomah County Detention Center on probation. What does that mean? It's a little bit confusing, but basically the accreditor said that the facility only fully complied with 66% of the standards. It partially complied with the other ones. Our pick of the week for food and drink, try Hapa PDX Ramen for dinner, and for drinks, go to Wedgehead Bar. Their hot toddy is supposed to be unreal. Get some ramen, get a takeout cocktail, throw on this podcast. Seems like a hell of a night to me. This has been the 9-Second Newsflash. Now let's turn to our interview of the week. Freelance journalist Thatcher Schmid brings us this story about the hundreds of Portlanders who live in their cars. Not only is this a society that I'm not personally familiar with, but it's also one that flies under the radar when activists and civic leaders talk about homelessness. Here are my questions for Thatcher, not only about his story, but also about Portland as a whole. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoy. All right, Thatcher, you wrote this story about a kind of underground community, a community that isn't talked about a lot, and that is the thousands of Portlanders who live in their cars. what is the take-home message that you want readers at home to hear from the story?
I think I approach this more as a question than sort of having a take-home message that would be clear. And I'm not sure, sometimes with the complexities of this issue, I end up with just as many questions at the end as I had at the beginning, just different ones. I think it's pretty clear that this is an issue that touches a great broad range of people living in the Portland and Multnomah County, and even like the whole region, you know, the four county region, including Vancouver, Clackamas County, Washington County, and Multnomah County. So it's a complex one. I think there's a lot of people that really want to help. I think there's a lot of people doing great work to try to help this population already. But there are still some significant questions around, you know, the data on this population and the level of service that they may be able to have access to.
You know, if you're living in a government provided house or a shelter, you can get up, leave for the day, go to a job interview, stretch your legs, get exercise, do things that we know are really important to improving your livelihood, improving your life. If you're living in your car, if I live in my car, I don't want to leave my car because I want to have eyes on my car. I want to be able to see if somebody's going to try to tamper with my car. I'm probably, you know, like you said, many people are living on the sides of streets, on the sides of highways. I'm worried that my car is going to get towed, impounded. Was that a sentiment that's shared by a lot of people that if you're living in your car, that's pretty much all you're doing. You're spending 23 hours a day in your car, and that really prevents you from being able to change your situation in life.
I have to, you know, repeat that there's incredible diversity of situations in for people that are in vehicle residence, just as much as people in tents on the streets or in shelters. I think there's a huge question that the data really shows us, both locally in Multnomah County and also nationally with the point in time count, is that over the years, we've seen in the last decade or so, we've seen an increasing proportion at the same time that we have houselessness is growing overall in sort of the scope of the problem. We're also seeing a greater and greater percentage of people that are identifying or being counted as homeless or houseless that are in unsheltered situations. And that definitely can be isolating. It can definitely make it harder for people to be connected to the continuum of care, to nonprofits, to places that offer services, that offer, you know, access to housing or wait lists or case management or food or, you know, myriad other things that people may need in these situations. At the same time, people that are in these situations have a lot of reasons, whether that's, you know, having kittens or other animals, or it's, you know, reluctance to be a part of a faith-based shelter, or, you know, concerns about COVID-19 and public health or other things that they're worried about that prevent them from wanting to go into some of the shelter systems that exist. So there's a lot of different ways of looking at it. But yes, it's a very isolating situation sometimes out there.
As a journalist, you had to kind of walk a very tricky tightrope between two things. At one end of the spectrum, you had to get out these people's important stories and report their stories and talk about their stories. And at the other end of the spectrum, you're writing for a news site that values facts and tries to bring readers facts. And a lot of these stories that people are bringing you, another source can't verify, might not be the most reliable sources themselves. And while really important to tell, you're kind of dealing with a dilemma here, and you were open about it. You were like, hey, I couldn't verify this. We called the police department, tried to verify this. Talk to us who maybe haven't reported on a story quite like this. What's that like? What burden do you have to do to publish the story and feel good about it?
I think, so I'm an independent reporter. I don't make a lot of money from the work that I do. I also, what I do is informed by a couple decades working in you know, services, including, you know, social services and housing services. But I think that journalists have an obligation to kind of swim against the tide of the history of what we've seen in published journalism, which is basically the people that are homeless or experiencing homelessness or even poverty or other types of marginalization, including, you know, because of their race or other things, like are considered not credible sources. In the years that I've been interviewing people on the street level, I've found that these people are typically as nice and as honest and as credible as anybody living in a house. However, their situation may be more dynamic and volatile, and it may be, you know, and certainly is more unsafe. So it may be harder for them to trust a journalist than somebody who is of a high class or high status in society. So I think journalists just have to, we have to, you know, not forget our history with muckraking. And we also have to, you know, be willing to include the broadest possible range of voices in the dialogue that's going on in the discussion. And the way I've done that is just sort of kind of on the street journalism and trying to make sure that that's included. And yes, it is very hard to verify sometimes or impossible to verify stuff. And, you know, I also have to be aware of my own safety going out there and, you know, just try to kind of keep in mind the situations that are, if people are symptomatic, you know, I leave them be, you know, I give people respect on the street and I just kind of holler to let them know I'm coming. If they're in an RV, they're typically going to be like unseen. So I'm, you know, say, hey, I come in peace. I'm a journalist. I'm, you know, I just want to try to have an interview, you know, and then I move on if there's a reason that they don't seem like they are interested or willing to talk. And even since this story, I've had a lot of people reaching out to me, including people that are in vehicles. And, you know, really what I can offer is to go and sit with them, you know, to buy them a meal, to listen to what they have to say. But it's like I can't, you know, do what I did 10, 15 years ago, which is try to case manage them in some way.
Last question here, a little wrap up question. We all have a word count. We all have a time deadline. What's something that got left out of the article, maybe another profile, another angle that you wanted to add in, but just couldn't make the cut?
Geez, that's a great question. I think there's a few things. There's never a way to get everything in. And I think that's what good editing does and, you know, helps you to get to the core of the story. So I appreciate that. And sometimes sources don't understand or readers don't understand that journalism is fundamentally like a dialogue, including between the, you know, the team of people that at the newspaper or media outlet. I think the fact that this is an East Side problem overwhelmingly is established by both interviews with PBOT sources and the Bureau of Environmental Services. I think that's an important piece of this, the geography of it, because, you know, as we've seen, like Portland has an at-large city council. And so there's, you know, there's a strong argument to be made for the lack of representation for, you know, displaced or impoverished or marginalized populations on the east side of the Willamette River. You know, Benji Vuong, who is quoted, you know, from Free Hot Soup, who's quoted in that story, talked about people, you know, staying on the east side because there's, it's flatter, you know, there's less patrolling by Portland police, and people are able to actually just make all right turns. There's not all these one-way streets like you get on the west side or in downtown Portland, where people can actually, if they have a vehicle that's just really struggling, can actually turn right, and are able to navigate the streets that way. But that's interesting. One of many issues. I think the regional, you know, West Coast geography of unsheltered homelessness and vehicle residency is also very significant on a national level. It's, you know, Seattle, it's Portland, it's San Francisco Bay Area and LA and other West Coast and American West cities and regions that are dealing with this problem most. And yet HUD on the East Coast is the one in charge of a lot of the response to this. And arguably, you know, there's a statistical invisibility of this entire population in the HUD data.
Well, Thatcher, thanks so much for your time, and I'll talk to you soon, hopefully.
Thank you. Good luck.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Well, folks, that's our show. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Dive Podcast. For Willamette Week, I'm Hank Sanders. We'll see you Saturday. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Dive Podcast, presented by Willamette Week. For more information on this podcast or the biggest stories in Portland, go to wweek.com and follow Willamette Week on all socials. We're doing some really cool things related to the podcast on our Instagram and Twitter. It includes giveaways, behind the scenes, etc. A lot of cool things coming your way, so give those a follow. Special thanks to our guests for joining us, and thank you to Aaron Mesh, Mark Zussman, and Brian Panganibon, as well as the entire Willamette Week family. Last but not least, thank you so much to Heather Witte and AmpMusic.co for the music that you hear on this podcast. For Willamette Week, I'm Hank Sanders. This has been the Dive Podcast.